This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Politrix.
He was detained by illness last week, but like a politician rising from scandal, casting off allegations and criminal charges, he has cast off the blankets to grace us with his presence and knowledge again. Please welcome our Minister of Interpretation, Botsang Modimoame Muilwa.
Good morning. Good morning, Fresh, and good morning to the followers and viewers.
Yes, sir.
I missed you guys.
Welcome back. We missed you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Let's go straight into Parliament, the hearing into the public protector's fitness to hold office, despite the fact that her term is ending very, very soon.
October, to be exact.
They found money for her legal representation. Is that money even enough?
Well, look, there's money in this country. They will always find money to can do their job or to be seen to be working. 30 million already exhausted in less than a year. Mm. And now they found plus minus 4 million. There's a drop in an ocean. When you look at legal fees, the dragging of this case by both parties, as well as the matters that keeps on popping up, I think that 4 million, it was used up before it was even transferred to its coffers with the Public Protector's Office. But again, this is one situation where it demonstrates how our administrative processes actually are money-wasting processes. You know, you spent almost 40 million in less than 1 year to make a determination whether a person is fit to hold office or not. And you still haven't arrived at that point. And it's not only 40 million. She continues to get her salary with all the perks and benefits. And we are losing on time. And her term, you know, as you correctly said, it's coming to an end in October. Is it worth it for us to can be running this process? I don't think so. It has not even given us fruits, because it has become clear to me and to many people that this is actually even more personal. You know, people are failing in performing their duties in government, in various, you know, spheres of government, and are they taken through that process of government? And we spend millions in order to determine whether a person is fit or not, as if we didn't have, you know, processes to interview and appoint people. And what do we base on failure to perform duties on? Are we basing it on the public protector's case being thrown out by controversial courts? And is that the only reason we are seeing a person is failing to perform their duties, or are there other? We haven't heard of anything else that makes the nation to say she's not performing her duties, except her losing cases in court.
Isn't that grounds enough, though, to...
Well, I personally don't think that solely is grounds enough. We know that actually our judiciary has been questioned. We know the type of cases that she has been handling as well. Are we looking at the percentages? Are we saying she had, for an example, 100 cases and she lost 20 of them and she was successful in 80 of them, or she lost 80 of them and successful in 20? Are we using those kind of statistics? Are we using that based on the wrong decisions or erroneous decisions she has made in the past? But why spend so many millions on legal fees? Now they came and they are pretending as if she's not entitled. You must remember, the person who is facing the portfolio committee at the moment, it is not Busuem Kabane, the person. It is Busuem Kabane, the advocate and the public protector. And we can't separate, you know, her official duties from her title and responsibilities. Unfortunately, Fresh, the constitution of this country makes provision for such. It makes provision for, you know, people squandering monies, and we shouldn't complain. The problem lies with us and the constitution we are sitting with. The same can be said with all other, you know, public offices that are spending money. Eskom is burning billions every day while you are still sitting in darkness.
In fact, the UDM have also been in the news regarding Shamila Batoyi. What's that been all about?
Well, it's the same. It's the same for me. I want to observe the Shamila Batoyi process that General Bantolomis and the UDM and other groupings have teamed up to say she's actually not fit to get hold of. She's not successful in her work. For me, it has the same merits.
But how do we measure that success?
Merits and principles. The same way as the Public Protector's Office. When Shamila Batoyi took up office, there were almost over 600 pending cases that were sitting with the NPA. Mm. And obviously, we know with the crime in the country, whether it's civil offences or criminal offences, obviously those numbers increased. You can go back and look 3 years back until today. How many successful prosecutions, especially those in the limelight, in politics as well as in corruption, has the NPA become successful in prosecuting the offenders or the perpetrators or the alleged offenders? How many of them? And that we should use the same stick to gauge if Shamila Badoy is performing her duties. She did at some stage lament lack of resources in terms of financial resources as well as personnel, and the government made those resources available, but they are losing cases left, right and center. I mean, two of the biggest cases this country is faced with is the extradition of the Gupta brothers into South Africa. The second one, it's a case that will lead or link to the Estina Dairy Farm case. And they've completely messed it up and lost. I mean, they were even told by a judge in court how the NPA came to court ill-prepared. And things that, for me, that is underperformance. And I think the country needs watchdogs. Like, but whether it's Bandolomiso, is the UDM or a group of people who are actually watching on how one hand of government is disciplining non-performers while on the other ones are getting away with it. But the NPA has very serious problems in the Republic of South Africa, and we thought that was resolved 3 years back when Shamila Badoy was appointed. It looks like we're still on the same position. At some stage, she blames the police blames NPA, and you find the judges in court blames the police and the NPA. So it's a blaming game where everybody's blaming another one, but monies are coming out. And not only monies that we are using in inquiries, these people are paid. These public office bearers are paid. They're getting salaries to perform duties where they are failing to perform basic roles and what they're supposed to do. But I think we should watch very closely how is the president going to handle the Shamila Badoy case. And if she is indeed going to stand up and defend herself to say, no, no, she's been successful and performing her duties as required. And I think it's something that we should look at very closely. Accountability is something that lacks in the country. We are having a problem with accountability, and people go to sit in front of parliamentary committees and talk about how they failed and talk about how they done wrong. And we see then, we watch on television, you know, these days, what is our soapy? Is to sit and watch court proceedings in South Africa these days. You sit and watch, you know, proceedings in parliament the whole day. If it's not there, we get bored. People say, no, I failed in doing this. I squandered money. I misused the money. I overspent. I still got my salary.
Life goes on.
Ends there. Life goes on.
Let's stay in parliament. Eskom chair was in parliament talking about the André de Ruyter dossier. And the fact that, I think, alluded to the fact that Minister Gordhan had also said, we need to find a way of investigating what's going on here.
Look, but before the current chairperson, Mr. Izit Makanya, the current chairperson of Eskom, coincidentally, after or during the process of being in parliament, the former chairperson or his predecessor, Professor Malekabu Mwakoba, also went public and went to parliament as well to go and explain what is actually or what transpired when he was the chairperson of Eskom.
Yeah.
And it's a sad state of affairs, Fresh. And let me tell you, and we should call it what it is. Either politicians are lying to the nation or are misleading the nation. And it's very sad that the elected people who are sitting in parliament, who are supposed to be lawmakers, as well as accounting officers who are holding public servants like DGs, CEOs, and ministers accountable, they sit there and they let Eskom management to play Mickey Mouse games with them. You know, I follow that whole process of Eskom. The one former chairperson of Eskom comes and says, no, 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 the director is correct, he's telling the truth. This process was sanctioned. He reported to me as Professor Malekabu Mokgoba that there's an investigation taking place, and this investigation is funded by the private sector. I'll come back to that. It's funded by the private sector. He didn't only tell me as the chairperson of the board. He informed the political principal, who is Minister Pravin Gordhan, as the Minister of Public Enterprises. He also informed Mr. Sydney Mufumadi, who was appointed as the special, you know, envoy of the president regarding the Eskom affairs. He didn't stop there. He informed the President of the Republic in front of Minister Pravin, in front of me as Professor Malakapurum Kwab. So the President, the Minister, and the Special Envoy, and the Chairperson of the Board were aware of this clandestine investigation carried by the private sector on a state entity. Now the current chairperson comes and says, I don't know anything about it. Director must come out clear. We didn't know who sanctioned that. We did not. He wouldn't know because he was not there. But it is worrying that there was no proper handing over from the one chairperson to another. That's why the current chairperson is not aware of what was happening in Eskom.
Isn't there also a claim that the reason we decided to do this because we felt like the cops were dragging their feet?
Well, that's what Professor Mokgoba said, but it is also very worrisome that a person of Professor Mokgoba's caliber, first of all, you know, knowing the history of this country, and being an academic and a chairperson of one of the biggest state-owned entities in the world, not only in South Africa, does not have confidence in the law enforcement entity of the state, and he accepts that a former apartheid era policemen and spies are being used not by Eskom only, but are funded and paid by the private sector to can conduct, you know, an intelligence investigation into a state-owned entity. And this brings me back to what I said. I'll hold on to it. Is that not state capture? When we speak of state capture, is to allow business, you know, unity or business leadership, South Africa, whatever it's called, to can spend millions of rands for a bunch of people who are former apartheid era spies and policemen to can investigate a state-owned entity. And the spies of the country that are sitting at SSA or even in the presidency are sitting there and are not aware that somebody is doing what they are supposed to do. For me, that is absolute state capture. If we talk of state being captured, and by the way, what makes it state capture is because the head of state, senior officials of the ruling party, as well as the government, the minister of state owned, are aware of this process that the private sector is actually investigating what the police are supposed to be. Now, what should the normal citizens, me and you, do when political office bearers and principals do not have confidence in the police system of the country? How should the nation trust the hawks, the police, the NPA, and so forth when they don't trust them? But there's something also very interesting and as controversial like this. Two things, and we should connect the dots. The same people that were appointed by business to investigate Eskom, if you look at those people, it's the same people that at some stage in this country were used by SARS to investigate the so-called rogue unit. There's a very same bunch of people. And guess who was at the helm of SARS when that happened? It was Pravin Gordhan. So for me, it looks like Minister Pravin Gordhan is actually running a parallel state. He uses private people, private investigators, private spies to investigate and spy on people wherever he is. And is that not running a parallel state? Who is he reporting to?
But one could argue that because I believe in the entire value chain, people are captured, I need to run a parallel look into things. Surely it makes sense to do that.
How do you believe that people are captured when you may actually being captured yourself? The fact that you are looking for an alternative to report and believe in somebody else and not the prescribed system, then you are actually captured by those you believe in. We have parliament. And again, this is where I have a problem that Eskom and intelligence and other, you know, now non-classified ministries are sitting at the presidency. We have government departments that are accounting to parliament. We've got various parliamentary portfolio committees. We've got SCOPA. When you are a minister or a cabinet member and you've got doubt in the processes of the department you are leading, you have a responsibility to go to the National Assembly, to go to Parliament and report of the challenges that you are being faced with. Now you don't do that. You bypass the prescribed rules and regulations and you go and you report to the business sector. It's a problem. And that's why I'm one of the people who are actually, you know, advocating for the presidency to start being accountable. You see, when President Ramaphosa came into power, what he did is something very smart, and we spoke about it earlier. and a lot of leaders in the world, Donald Trump did it in the US. You take the strategic ministries or department, you bring them closer to you into your office.
You consolidate.
You consolidate them around you, okay? Sure. You they've brought in intelligence into the office. And when this ESCOM investigation happened, the state security agency was sitting in the presidency.
Yes.
Okay, then you've got all alarms and the director general. But guess what? And nobody has ever talked about it. The president in South Africa is not accounting to any portfolio committee. We've got various portfolio committees where various government departments, they get called, ministers get called, they go to account. Who questions President Ramaphosa and his four or five ministers and the director general? There's a DG there, there's a budget, there's a deputy president. It's the same as a government department where you have a minister and a deputy minister. You have a president and a deputy president. You have a director general, you've got a budget, and now there's four ministers sitting in the presidency. Who do they account for? Where do they go to report? Which portfolio committee ever calls the presidency and say, we gave you the money, you had project, you were supposed to deliver on this. Can you come and brief this committee on what have you done? Where have you spent the money? What are the successes, challenges, and failures? We don't have that overseeing structure that is overseeing the presidency to be found accountable. That's why you find people sitting in there doing as they wish, you know, and nobody's holding them accountable. We are sitting 100 days close to with Mr. Sputla, the Minister of Electricity, and nobody's going to stand up and say, and I've said it, it costs this country an average of 44 million rands to have one minister. Not the minister of the department. One minister costs the country 44 million rands on average per annum. And we're spending 44 million rands on a caretaker minister who stands up and says, yeah, I don't have powers at the moment. I don't have executive powers. So why do we call him a minister when he doesn't have executive powers? Although the benefits that goes with the title are those of a minister.
In fact, like is it Sakina was saying, then surely you're a project manager, you're not a minister, if you don't have powers.
Well, I think Sakina actually exposed, you know, the not Moham Kopa in that instance, but the whole process, how fast this whole process is, and he end up actually disclosing that he's more like a project manager, and that's why people were saying at the beginning, if Sputla is going to sit, or Mr. Ramaphosa is going to sit and look at fixing problems in ESCOM, it looks like they are getting worse. Why don't he become a special project, not a whole minister, a special project? And he could have been spending more or less money, more time on what he's doing, which I think he's doing very well, despite, you know, the fact that you are sitting on stage six and stage eight at the moment. I've listened to a lot of energy experts, you know, talking about how Praveen is not supposed to be challenging this in court. But you know what? That's another story we should be looking at, you know, to say, is the presence of Mr. Ramaphosa making a difference in the electricity sector?
Yeah. Now, you were asking the question, who watches the watcher in terms of, you know, who does the presidency report to? Surely if Scopa is the watcher of everyone else, then they should be reporting to Scopa too, no?
Or accounting to Scopa? They can account to Scopa, but Scopa comes in when? When there's reports of problems, corruption, fraud, and maladministration. That's when they come in. I'm talking about on regular public administration processes, where departments report and delivery. Okay. The president signs performance agreements, for example, with all other ministers, and in them doing that, they will have to come on midterm reviews to check if they are delivering on what they had promised to deliver on. Is the presidency being subjected to that process as well? Is President Ramaphosa, as the head of that department, the presidency, go to some parliamentary committee to say, I promise that I will eradicate, you know, youth unemployment in the next 1 year. I promise that I will fight corruption inside government, inside my cabinet. Has he come back to report to somebody to say, there's been allegations about ministers or cabinet members corrupt, youth unemployment, spending patterns? No. And we will make sure that by the end of December 2022, there will be no load shedding in South Africa. We are going to December 2023. The stages of load shedding are getting worse. And now courts had to come in or to step in to aid the government to do what they are supposed to be doing.
Speaking of the courts, I mean, the courts are saying that hospitals, schools, police stations must be exempt from load shedding, and that ESCOM or the ministry have a responsibility to ensure that. But Minister Gordhan is appealing that ruling.
Another money-wasting process on legal fees. Mm. You know, the courts, what I like
but
about
is it,
people...
But is it practical, though?
It is doable.
Okay.
I've listened to energy experts.
Yeah.
And only one person out of all of them, a gentleman by the name of Adil Nchabeleng, explained how we are getting into a worse situation. These are experts talking. I do not understand why do people think the court, and I read the judgment, the court said they must, you know, go to the meter box or the electricity box on the street and separate. That's not what the court say. The court is saying to the government, you have a constitutional obligation
to make a plan.
Yeah. Whatever you do, we don't care. Make sure that what we term in the public service as essential services, police for security, basic education, which is a right, you know, it's in the constitution, basic education and health. Make sure that they've got energy.
They can't be disrupted.
They can't be disrupted. Mm. Whatever you do, by all means necessary, and I'm saying it's possible, let me tell you what it will take. Mm. It will take money.
Sure.
That's all you need. If Eskom burns 34 billion, guys, do we know what is 34 billion rents? That's what Eskom is spending on diesel only.
Mm.
Only on diesel. We haven't talked about other things.
Yeah.
And this is the emergency diesel to keep the lights temporarily on during law. 34 billion. First, let me tell you something. I may not be an accountant, but 1 billion can keep the lights of all primary schools on in Gauteng only.
Sure.
1 billion. Mm. And the court is simply saying to Eskom, you can't provide electricity, you can't separate the grid.
Mm.
We are not technicians, we are not electricians. Go and buy generators for those schools. Go, as much as you buy diesel for the country, buy diesel for those schools. And they should not come with the excuse of strange resources that you don't have money.
Mm.
When you have money to spend on other things.
Sure.
The money that Mr. Pravin Gordhan is going to use to appeal this case, which will end up in the constitutional court because these are constitutional rights, that will go to the lawyers. It's going to amount to millions already. Instead of us starting somewhere, let us start somewhere.
Mm.
The court said you have 2 months to do it, not to keep the lights on. It doesn't, I don't intend
to come up with a plan.
To come up with a plan and you start implementing it somewhere where there's a need, especially like hospitals.
Mm.
You know, imagine going to a police station in the middle of the night when you are robbed and you find the policeman sitting in darkness. It's already a security risk.
Mm.
And provide them with a generator. Start putting solar panels. Start doing something to aid the nation. Mm. And that's how I interpreted the court decision.
And you know, instead of throwing energy into, we're going to fight this in the courts, personally for me, I mean, with the schools alone, you know, what stops us from saying to big business in the different areas, adopt a school.
Exactly.
Coming up with a solar plan for a school will cost you between 100 and 300,000.
Absolutely.
We've got rooftops. That's where the panels are.
Exactly.
Schools operate during the day, so you don't need batteries.
There's less.
You don't need batteries to store the power. All you need is the sun to make sure that we are running electricity during the day.
And
if there's batteries, maybe it's for on there's a rainy day.
Exactly.
But you don't need batteries to power the whole school. The kids are gone before the sun sets.
Absolutely. And first, maybe you should start talking to Ramoko by advising them.
Say to Busan Incorporated, if you spend 300,000 rand adopting a school in your neighborhood, we will exempt you of 300,000 rand worth of tax.
Of tax.
Incentivize business to get involved.
Those are some of the thinking that is supposed to be happening in government, but certainly it's not happening.
Mm.
You know, we always have meetings and seminars and conferences with investors and businesses. This is time now to call those businesses, to say, business, you are the largest consumer of electricity in the country. The mining sector, you go to the mine and say, that village around you, adopt the hospital in there, the school in there, and the police station there. One, you will benefit because the mine workers will be in a stable and safe environment.
Yes.
And invest in that. You have come with an example of tax exemption. And those are some of the benefits the government is supposed to be sitting and communicating about instead of rushing to the court. And when you are saying, Fresh, instead of defending and fighting. This fighting who? Mm. Who is Minister Pravin fighting in court? Is he fighting the South African citizens who have voted them into power, who are sitting there and say, we are basically, you know, want electricity? You know, I listened to the radio this morning. A gentleman phoned in one of the radio stations saying, for the last 6 days, he has been bathing with cold water. In this cold weather, imagine school-going children, you know, having to take a cold bath. My daughter actually told the mother that I need to go and stay with dad this week because I don't get load shedding where I stay. And there's you know, there's hot water and all that. I'm like, bring the child home. We can't be coping up like this. But I'm one of the few privileged who are in that situation. But we need to come with solutions, not stop fighting. If the government goes to court and defend this court decision or fight back this court decision, they're actually fighting the nation. And we are not talking everybody. We are talking essential services. What will be wrong if the government goes and spend, you have estimated between 100 and 300K, you know, on a generator or a solar panel that will, you know, put the lights on in one small hospital or clinic in a township. What harm will that? Those are the basic services that a government, a caring government, is supposed to be focusing on. Not us blaming and pointing fingers and appointing extra ministers and hearing all the stories of why this thing is not going to work. We may end up in stage 10 load shedding. And in the middle of all that, Eskom in parliament, Eskom going to court, the minister being on television, boom, Botswana goes dark 3 days ago.
Yes.
Botswana goes dark and they run out of electricity. Guess what? The beloved Republic of South Africa sends worth of 12,000 kilowatts of electricity to the Republic of Botswana. We can do this thing. Yes, we've got commitments to our neighbors that we have agreements with them and payments that they have effected. We have those agreements that we must honor, but charity begins at home. If I cannot feed my kids in the house and my neighbor's kids are hungry, I will take the food of my children and share with the hungry neighbor's kids, not take the food of my kids and give to my neighbors. And that's what our government is doing. We are not supposed to be going through what we are going through, but we need a consolidated, concerted effort of all role players, you know, to can come and hate with this energy crisis. This was created by politicians. This is a part. We are in crisis. We can't be pointing fingers now. We are supposed to be sitting down and say, what can everybody do on their part to can aid the situation?
In fact, I was reading the other day about how Salga in KZN are talking about how, you know, political appointments are one of the reasons municipalities can't deliver, and that they need to start running municipalities like businesses. Who's the best person for the job? Give that person the job so they can deliver services.
Absolutely. And the other thing also is deploying not only qualified people, but people who come from those communities and that region.
They know,
They know the challenges. They will work harder because they live amongst that community. Imagine me living in Gauteng, and the next thing I become a municipal manager somewhere in Kuruman. I don't say we should focus on being a regional state. But reality is that somebody who's a manager who have qualifications sitting in Kuruman will be a better municipal manager in Kuruman than me.
But they must be qualified.
They must be qualified. But again, I think it is gradually changing whereby political parties are realizing that cadre deployment is not working for them. It has actually created problems where incompetent people, greedy and selfish, corrupt people are being deployed into very key strategic positions of government. One, they are failing to deliver because they are not qualified for those positions. But two, they do not care. There's an element of political office bearers in South Africa not caring about what happens within their communities. And that's one of the biggest challenges we are faced with.
Could we wrap it up by going across the border?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so civil rights activists in the kingdom of Eswatini taking a stand. It's been big news this week.
Well, long overdue. Look, the challenges at the kingdom of Eswatini have been happening for many years. You know, when I was a very junior diplomat in the mid-90s, one of the issues that the SACU desk at that time had to deal with was the trampling on human rights in the kingdom of Eswatini. Eswatini, it's a very tiny kingdom that is sitting in the middle, or you know, of surrounded by South Africa almost wholly, and Mozambique to a lesser extent. And there's been a cry and alarm. People have been killed for many years, journalists, lawyers, professors, and they've been killed in Eswatini. For many years, this has been happening. SACU, SADC, and the African Union have put a blind eye on that thing.
It's not a blind eye. It's called quiet diplomacy.
Well, then that quiet diplomacy, again, is not working for us. For a small kingdom like Eswatini, and by the way, I have to be very clear, I am not against kingdoms. We have kingdoms in Africa. We can mention Ghana. We can mention the Republic of South Africa with the Zulu Nation. We can mention the Mountain Kingdom of Lesotho, whereby they've got the monarchy. And it's working because they've got the government. You understand? And why is that not happening in Eswatini? That is wholly dependent on one SADC member state, particularly South Africa, for funding, the US and the UK. They are funding the lifestyle and the existence of King Mswati in Eswatini. And now you ask yourself, being pro-democracy, South Africa, the UK and the US, being pro-democracy state, why are they silent in telling the person that they're feeding King Mswati to say, you can remain the king? It's happening with King Letsie in Lesotho. But let democracy prevail. Let the people have rights. And we're talking about basic human rights. People are not allowed to protest. Journalists are not allowed to write stories against the king. And this has been tabled at SADC for as many years as you can imagine, and we are not moving forward. But I am happy with...
So what would you like to see happen?
Look, SADC must take a position. And unfortunately, you know, let me off-ramp a little bit. We had the SADC Troika Summit last week. You know, the leaders we elect in Africa. You've got the most important arm of SADC meeting. SADC consists of 15 member states, of which... two are in the sea and 13 are inland. 15 member states. They've got the most important meeting in the calendar of SADC, sitting in Namibia, chaired by the outgoing chairperson, president of Namibia, Gengbo. Guess what? Nine of the 15 member states, they don't show up. They instead leave their responsibility and duty of the SADC Troika and go and celebrate the coronation of the British former
imagine?
Colonial king in England. How upset. I still have to congratulate President Ramaphosa. President Gengbok didn't have a choice because he was the outgoing
host. Yes.
And the president of Tanzania and the president of the DRC, Tshisekedi, they didn't go. For a change, President Ramaphosa stood home and focused on domestic or regional challenges. Eswatini is sitting as a time bomb. And these leaders of SADC leave their responsibility. They go and they party with King Prince Charles
in King George the Third.
And King George the Third, whatever he is. This is a colonizer. These are the people who enslaved Africans, who raped Africans, who murdered Africans, who colonized, who are racist towards this African
who
state.
Who still have our diamonds.
Who still have our diamonds and gold stored in reserves in England. And they declared their duties. These are the kind of leaders we elect. But then the human rights, you know, organizations and groups in the kingdom of Eswatini have consolidated themselves. And the wife of one of the slain leaders who was murdered in early January or mid-January this year is in the forefront of the day. He took this matter to a SADC platform and an AU platform in Bangui this past week. And I think they should be, you know, commended for that stand. I think it's about time that SADC must take a resolution to instruct King Mswati to allow democracy to prevail in the kingdom of Eswatini, or else we look like a Mickey Mouse game. The other challenge we are sitting with SADC, unlike the EAC, the East African Community, is that SADC works on protocols. We don't have a parliament. Like the EAC has written regulations on how member states will conduct themselves.
And that works for them.
It works for them. Yeah. You are held accountable. But in SADC, it's a gentleman's agreement, and they go party.
Living
their own countries. And I think somebody somewhere should start talking to King Mswati with due respect that you can't be a king in Africa and you treat your people the way he's treating the people of Eswatini. One day Eswatini will explode. And the danger with Eswatini exploding is that it is bordering Mozambique that is facing now challenges.
Already there's instability.
There's instability in the sub-region of the continent. And these are things we must manage at the moment, diplomatically, to say, What is it that King Moswati will lose if he allows democracy to prevail in the kingdom of Eswatini? And people should have human rights. The African Union is very quiet and silent about human rights being trampled on by a whole king, you know, in a small kingdom and a nation like Eswatini. I think it's totally unacceptable. They should actually start closing the taps of funding King Moswati's lifestyle so that the people of Eswatini can start raising their voices and go and elect a democratically elected government. He will remain the king. It's fine. You know, that's King Letsieng Lesotho. He's enjoying the benefits of being the king, but he's not interfering with the prime minister of the kingdom in running the affairs of the country. You understand? So those are some of the things that the SADC member states are supposed to be focusing on. We shouldn't wait for a war to erupt or violence to erupt. Then we start sending soldiers out and start talking. You must actually keep a problem before it happens. But it is long overdue.
So we close the taps, but then it's the people on the ground who suffer. And then, eventually are forced to flee across the border, and then they become your problem anyway.
The people of Eswatini are already living in South Africa, especially in the KZN, in Mpumalanga, and in Mozambique. They are already not benefiting from the resources that are actually being squandered by the monarchy. They are already not directly benefiting, but it is not only about money. You understand? It's not only about them. It is about them having a right, having being able to sit in a platform like this and talk about their concerns as citizens of a country. Without fear that you'll be shot, you'll be killed tomorrow. I mean, the gentleman who was killed, the former civil rights activist who was killed, he was shot through a window sitting next to the children and the wife, and somebody stood outside through the window and shot and killed that person. What kind of a nation is that? And we don't want that kind of situation in this, because it will obviously overflow to us, and we'll have to deal with those problems. We're already dealing with problems from Zimbabwe and Mozambique overflowing to South Africa. That is coming to happen. And I think President Ramaphosa should actually, muscle up a little bit in dealing with King Moswati. But again, I doubt if the president of Angola, who is now the current chairperson of SADC, imagine the incoming chairperson was not there when he was elected.
He was also
in a party in England celebrating the coronation of King Charles. And this guy, he is the next chairperson of... How do our African leaders think? You even go to an extent. I understand that SADC leadership or chairmanship is rotational. That is understandable. How do you then go and elect and choose a person who does not even deem it necessary to attend this thing? So the chairperson of SADC, under normal circumstances, is supposed to call Moswati in and the human rights arm of SADC and say, can we sit down and talk about what is happening there, devise a plan and roll out this plan? There's a lot of NGOs that are actually mushrooming and running in Eswatini. And maybe that's what they should start spending money on.
Sure.
On those NGOs, because what King Moswati will do, he will never attack the executive directors or the leaders of those NGOs, because most of them, they come from where? They come from the UK, they come from Australia, they come from the USA. He will never arrest them and jail them. You know, so the money must not go to him. The money must go to these NGOs to what? To render services like protection, education, and health services, instead of giving it to the king who's spending it on his many beloved wives and children. I think we must stop the rot in the continent regarding those processes. Stop giving people money that is intended for public use if they are not using it towards the interest of the public. That's what we should be doing.
And on that note, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And again, it's good to see the team here and the viewers.
Yes, sir.
Unfortunately, flu had me home. In the first time in 23 years, I had flu.
Sure.
And I hope it won't come back again. I've built the immune system now. But yeah, challenges in the country, the politics of South Africa is interesting as ever. But I think the nation should start standing up towards the elections next year and hold the government accountable. On this day, not only by going to court, we must raise our voices and we must talk more about this stuff.
We were not invited, but God save the King, Charles III. Butsa Mwilwa, we'll see you again in a week.
Thank you, my brother.
Thank you very much, brother man. We are done. Another show in the bag. It's Mother's Day, and soon, in fact, and it will seem easy and simple enough to wish mothers out there well. But we'd also like to salute the other mothers, the adoptive and foster mothers, some who work in orphanages and hospitals, the aunties and grannies who had to step in. And if you may have lost your mom, take comfort in the memories, celebrate the legacy, maybe give a younger person a shoulder to lean on. Hope you all enjoyed the spirit of Mother's Day and have a wow week. Thank you very much. We are done. Shout out to Amped Studios, Africa Podcast Network, cinematography by Pezulu Works. We love your work, guys. Audio engineer, Otis the Flow Fraser. Our guest, Butsang Mudimuwame, Minister of Information and Breaking Things Down, Muilwa. Show producer, Keleso Mudisa King, and our creative director, Kuvesh Mohan. Mail us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Have a great rest of the week in spite of yourselves. We're out of here.
This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week.